to the Divided Kingdom, the evening news program. Mr. and Mrs. America, Lou Caverly and I, Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly, have been bringing you this program since the year 2003. And you can hear the program on WWCR.com Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shortwave frequency is 4.840 megahertz. Again, that is 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 4.840, repeating on Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on 7.490 megahertz. And we also can be heard at Liberty Works Radio Network, and that's LWRN.net. You can go to LWRN.net, and we can be heard on Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m. And our newest venue is KStarTalkRadio.com. Again, that's KStarTalkRadio.com. We can be heard on it on Saturday afternoons at 5 p.m. Eastern and on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. And, you know, we are really praying for all of you out there, as we are located in flyover country. And tonight we have a time capsule warning message from 1962 from a very preeminent person. And it certainly was Back to the Future, all right. And we'll get into that for a few moments in a minute. First of all, we would like to tell you that we do need help to stay on the air. We will be starting to amass the money we will need at the end of October. So if some of you can help us with $10, $20, a little bit more, perhaps $100, you can send a check only made out to WWCR. Lou and I cannot take personal checks. You could send a money order, and that can just be left not filled out. You can make any amount on that, or you can send a little cash, or we can always use some postal stamps. And if you can't afford to help us, you can write us letters of encouragement. And you can send them to Lou, capital L-O-U, Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, capital B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 21609. And we really want to thank a few listeners who have been faithfully helping us for quite a few years, and a few new people who in the last couple years have helped us, because, as we said, our situation has changed, and we really do need a great deal of help to stay on the air. You're hearing this program two nights after the historic Biden-Trump debate, the first presidential debate. And it was just as chaotic, the breakdown of law and order in that situation, as in those blue cities. We were highly disappointed in all of this because, as teachers, Lou and I felt as though these were a couple of eighth-grade boys at recess time smarting off to their teacher with the kind of disrespect for moderator Chris Wallace. We're not sure what in the world was going on, and we even wondered to ourselves, certain participants didn't look exactly normal. Was something given to them? Was something there to set off one or both of them without the control they normally would have? The New World Order is very devious, and we're never certain about some things that are questionable. But there is one thing we are thinking about, that sometimes we have to look at the actions of someone rather than the speech. And if we were thinking about two things that were mentioned during that debate, one of them was the allegation that President Trump only paid $750 in taxes. And that would be a far cry from what Lou and I had to pay last year at our humble station in life. The other comment was when former Vice President Biden said that Antifa was an idea. It was only an idea. Now, I remarked to a friend today on the telephone, which would you rather have? Would you rather have someone who only paid $750 in taxes, or would you like to have what that idea represents of Biden saying Antifa is only an idea? Our whole country being taken down. So we must be warned to be careful and not be overwhelmed by the theatrics A lot of stuff is the Hegelian dialect, and we can't tell. Dialectic, I should say, not a dialect. It's almost like a dialect, isn't it, Lou? It's like another language, foreign language, that people in flyover country don't really want. But we know who ultimately is in control, and that is God. And we'll talk more about that. Now, back to this future glimpse of where we all are right now. And guess who had the glimpse? Why, listeners, it was the former Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in World War II and ex-President of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower. When he visited the renowned Bedford Springs Hotel in Bedford, PA, September 26, 1962. As you see, that's almost like 48 years, almost to the day ago. Ike was an augur of a dire situation to come, just the way I described in my book, Patriots Warning 1, America Attacked, my brother's, my own brother's eloquent telephone warning to my elderly mother, Margaret, on September 11, 2001. Quote, "Our nation is in dire peril." Former President Eisenhower's words on that early autumn day in 1962 were probably not understood at all then by the Republicans surrounding Ike in that rural, bucolic place, but they really, really resonate with us today.
This is Lou Caraway. The historic words of Ike were these: "You are fighting for your lives and for what you hold dear and the future of our Commonwealth. As soon as you realize it, I know you will do your very best, and your best will be good enough. Wars and campaigns are won by men who refuse to be defeated." Unquote. Those powerful, prescient words are documented in the book, That Magical Bedford Springs Water, by John Bachman, Bedford historian, in 2011. Eisenhower knew about the trouble, the tyranny coming, for he also warned about the military-industrial complex in his farewell speech to the nation. Yet deep state, New World Order minions continued to amass greater and greater power and control, aided by an increasingly sold-out mainstream media. We are not a full month gone from the 19th anniversary of the September 11th horrors. Earlier, on a program, Elizabeth recounted how I was miraculously aided by God during the course of just one day's access to the Internet in June 2002, to probe the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and other sources for the real truth on the NWO's inside job. This included early reports of New York City firemen and police hearing explosions in the buildings early on. It included the documentation of pieces of people's belongings and even human body fragments found 6 miles from the so-called Flight 93 crash site at Shanksville, Pennsylvania. These items had magically appeared at Indian Lake, 6 miles away from the Flight 93 scene. Elizabeth has told of a family member who interviewed a local resident of Shanksville who claimed he saw the second plane. In conjunction with that, another area resident and Vietnam vet heard what he was sure was a missile.
And we would interject there. There were allegations that there was a group called the Happy Hooligans, and they were sort of a renegade patriot group who took the thing down, took Flight 93 down, to spare it going on over the White House. So these are some of the stories and almost urban rumors, but, you know, they're far more credible than the standard line. Pick it up, Lou.
Yes. Many still believe the cover-up, now institutionalized by our top leaders attending Shanksville every September 11th to perpetuate the obscene lie.
Yes. And we want to say again here, we're going to interject, that God Almighty is in control. And we saw the return, and this was the marchers of the Christians down in the D.C. area near the Washington Monument. Franklin Graham, I think, was sort of at the head of all of this. And I watched some of the TV coverage. Lou was gone that day and could not see much of the actual morning time, early afternoon time. but it was very impressive. There were many speakers. Dr. James Dobson was one, and I think he said this pointedly. He said, "I've only been given 7 minutes to speak." And, of course, he was hard-hitting about the need to repent because of the sins connected with the murder of the 60-plus million babies unborn and the acceptance of the LGBTQ change in our world with same-sex marriage, which is strictly against God's scripture. So, you know, in watching this, we also thought we would see Pastor Jonathan Kahn. He was supposed to be speaking, and I've referred to his very important books, The Harbinger 1 and his new book now, The Harbinger 2, which really talks about the evidence for God's judgment having started on America, but he was nowhere to be seen on the Christian channels. And I said to Lou, I wondered whether this was a kind of subtle anti-Semitic thing among the Christian community. You know, there is evil everywhere, and God only knows whether he will give us more time and mercy, because it was rather stunning. I was reading another book, and this is I Have Walked with the Living God by Pat Robertson of the 700 Club. Pat is now 90 years old, and in general, except for his approval of the KJV Bible's replacements, those modern versions that take away the divinity of God, and some of them even remove the comforter from helping mankind. Many things that we think are wrong with that. Except for that, largely, I thought this was a very worthwhile book. I Have Walked with the Living God by Pat Robertson, and it is new. So Lou's getting that for his birthday, which will be on Friday, October 2nd. And he's like Jack Benny, aren't you, Lou?
Just 39, that's right.
Just 39. Yeah, you don't have Rochester in the background either. You just have me. But I'm going to make you some good food on that day, I'm sure.
Good.
So, at any rate, in this book, Pat Robertson recounted, to my great surprise, that in 1980, there was a similar gathering right down there, again, in the D.C. area, I guess, practically the same spot. 500,000 came and prayed and probably wept and had repentance. But that was only 7 years after Roe versus Wade went into action. And what has happened? Did the church wake up? I think not. Did the apathy increase? I think so. Did the sin get into the church? Because we've heard that, I believe, the abortion rate in the Christian church, I'm not sure what part of the Christian church, whether it's evangelicals, you know, whether it's just Protestants, but there were some figures quoted that the rate is the same as out in the world, you know, people who aren't even Christians. So it's rather stunning. We're saying here that, we'll reiterate this again later, but after the election, we believe that God is leading us to bring out more and more spiritual evils and to bring more hope spiritually to the Christians listening to this program. But at any rate, tonight we really are into this, and we'll probably have a part two. And the title of this program is Ike's Warning, Part One. You are fighting for your lives, COVID and COVID tyranny. That's what we're kind of going to get into. And we say that the cynical hatred of the world's ruling elite knows no bounds. Ike said, you are fighting for your lives. As soon as you realize it, I know you will do your very best. General Smedley Butler turned down the New World Order's offer to lead a 1934 coup on the White House. How timely is that? Just now, as the U.S. approaches the beyond crucial presidential election. And we saw at Natural News, Dr. Jerome Corsi had the idea that possibly the deep state will try to take Trump out before January 20th. So we need a lot of prayer. We need a lot of prayer, because even though he seemed to be so rude and interrupting the moderator in the debate so much, we know we can point to many, many good things that he has done for all of us. The TPP, we're out of that. We're out of the climate change. Biden would put us right back. He would destroy all of our petroleum predominance in the world now. He would change so many things. But most of all, look at those blue cities. Yes, I think the Republicans allowed it to get worse and worse to have an advantage over the election, and that's disgusting. God will judge that, too, won't he, Lou?
Yes, he will.
He will judge that.
Yes.
But at the same time, we see real fruit. We see how the Republican convention honored the Right to Life movement. More than that, it really, really showed us that the consciences of American citizens are changing in regard to this. Just like with slavery, when Lincoln said, here's a little woman that wrote the book that changed it all. What was that book, Lou?
Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah, Harriet Beecher Stowe. So you see, we're a little program, but we hope that God will use us, too, as a mustard seed. Now, Smedley Butler, General Smedley Butler, wrote a book called War is a Racket. And one of the greatest turning points that Trump has done may be what is being put out in the news, that the Pentagon says all U.S. troops will be home from Afghanistan by spring 2021. That alone is enough for any American to vote for Trump. And a real sea change in protecting our young American men's lives. Now, an illustration of the deep state New World Order's disregard for human life, period, came, and again, you see, we're in that afterglow of September 11th events and the memorials to it, Saturday. Now, we think about the trumped up, and I didn't mean to make a funny there, but the overblown stage acting up there at Flight 93. I think last year Pence was there. This year I think Biden and Trump were there. Is that what you heard, Lou?
I think that's true.
I think so. Okay, we have that. But we also have underneath the deep state's loathing, the elite people, the billionaires of the world, their loathing of us humans here in flyover country. So in a Washington Post headline, back on Saturday, May the 10th, 2008, this is what it said. Some war dead cremated at facility that handles animals. Huh?
Elizabeth, an Army officer saw a sign that alerted him about what was going on. Allegedly at a crematory managed near Dover Air Force Base by a man named Bose. Here's an excerpt of that 2008 Washington Post piece. It soon rocketed to the attention of Gates, who directed David S.C. Chu, the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, to conduct a, quote, comprehensive review of existing Department of Defense policies and practices governing the cremation and handling of remains of U.S. service members, Morrell said. Both said the Army officer, quote, got in a huff because he saw the sign and went back and really stirred up the pot, unquote. The officer attended the cremation because no relative of the deceased soldier was present. Bose said, adding that the officer left without speaking to him or asking any questions. Bose said that his company owns one pet crematory that is square and too small for most humans, who are cremated into larger rectangular crematories in the same room. He was adamant that there had, quote, not been any people gone through the pet crematory, unquote. He said, we just don't do that. The Air Force has no crematory facility at Dover Air Force Base, where the Dover Port Mortuary handles the remains of all U.S. service members who die overseas. As a result, in 2001, Air Force officials contracted with two local funeral homes to perform cremations, including with Torbert Funeral Chapels and Crematories, which oversees the facility managed by Bose, and another crematory that is located with a funeral home. Lieutenant General Frank G. Klotz, director of the Air Force staff, said he does not know whether any military officer had ever inspected the contracted crematories. He said, quote, that is something which we need to take a look at, unquote. Typically, Bose said, service members would drop off remains at his crematory after he signed the paperwork for them, and we return the next day to sign for it and pick up the remains. That would be contrary to the normal procedure described by Klotz, in which the military provides an escort for all service members killed overseas during transport to the United States and again after medical processing at the Dover Mortuary as the deceased returns home for interment. Klotz said that the Air Force is looking into whether it has, quote, complete presence throughout this entire process, adding, presence is very important. Air Force Secretary Michael W. Wynn directed yesterday that the service, quote, cease using the off-site crematory. Use only crematory facilities that are co-located with the licensed funeral homes and have a military presence during the off-base process at the funeral home facilities, Morrell said. And I'll interject. One would think now that morality and respect would be the first order of business and real repentance. But the article concludes half-heartedly in this way, quote, military officials said that they are concerned that the new requirements, such as that the crematory be located with a funeral home, would slow the cremation process. Quote, Dover is a relatively small city, unquote.
Expedience,
yes.
Not morality, not love for the creation of God in his own image. Eisenhower's chilling words, "You are fighting for your lives," echoed on after the horrific 9/11 destruction of more than 3,000 plus of those lives. Just as now, with the cynical American billionaires and corporations who want to cull the population, poor blacks, and also decimate the American middle class, you know, all under cover of the sinister deception of something called Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Anti-fascism? I think not, as we see what's really happening. The embryo of this hatred toward all of us flyover deplorables was again shown by a similar headline, Lou, to what you brought us about the military. Wasn't it Kissinger who said they were just dumb farm animals to be sent and killed? That's what we're thought of. That's why we really applaud President Trump, and we want all of you to pray that our boys and some of the girls will be brought home from Afghanistan by next spring, all of them. So now, here we had the record as late as February 29th, 2012, again in the pre-Jeff Bezos ownership period, the Washington Post. And again, this is February 29th, 2012. Some 9/11 remains ended up in the landfill. Pentagon review of Dover Air Force Base mortuary found several problems. And we can see this is overlapping a little bit, you see, with what Lou told you. This was by Craig Whitlock. Some human remains recovered from the September 11, 2001 attacks on the Pentagon and in Shanksville, PA, were incinerated and dumped in a landfill. The Defense Department said Tuesday in the latest revelation about mishandled body parts at the Dover Air Force Base mortuary. A new Pentagon review of the troubled mortuary disclosed several other problems, including fresh allegations of fraud and misplaced remains over the past decade, despite previous assurances by Air Force officials that they had adequately investigated operations at the base. The revelation that, quote, several portions of remains, end of quote, recovered from the Pentagon and Shanksville ended up in a landfill, was mentioned briefly on the latter pages of a report released Tuesday after an investigation led by retired Army General John P. Abiazade. The report said that the September 11th remains in question, quote, could not be tested or identified, apparently because they were too small or charred to allow for DNA analysis. The remains were cremated and then mixed with biomedical waste at the Dover mortuary, where they were given to a contractor who incinerated them and dumped the residue in a landfill. Oh, Lou, isn't this horrible?
Yes.
We're considered biomedical waste. We're linked with it. The report cites Army and Air Force memos from July and August 2002, directing that an unspecified number of, quote, remains from the attack on the Pentagon be incinerated. At a news conference Tuesday afternoon, Abiazade said he didn't know many details on what happened to the remains of September 11th victims. We did not spend a great deal of time and effort and energy looking into what you're talking about, he said in response to a reporter's questions. That was not our charge. Our charge was to look forward. Abiazade declined to release the memos or other documentation on the matter, saying, I have no authority to release anything. And so we go on down, and we get a little more of this. In November, the Washington Post reported that the Dover mortuary for years had disposed of incinerated portions of remains of troops killed in Iraq and Afghanistan in a Virginia landfill. The practice involved unidentified or unclaimed body parts. It was not made known to troops' family members. There again, Lou, do you see flyover company, that flyover country people, we're just so deplorable that we don't even deserve to be told the truth of the desecration of our family members. Doesn't that make your Scottish fury rise?
It surely does, yes.
And so that's one part of it. At the time, the Air Force officials said their mortuary records went back to only 2003 and that they did not know when the landfill dumping began. Oh, oops, we're so sorry, we don't know. I'm interjecting that. On February 6th, however, in response to news reports about the landfill dumping, Representative Rush D. Holt, Democrat, New Jersey, wrote a letter to Panetta, that would be Leon Panetta, asking, could the Defense Department confirm that, quote, no 9/11 victims' remains were incinerated, mixed with medical waste, and sent to a landfill? The Pentagon has not responded, according to Holt. In an interview Tuesday, Holt accused the Pentagon of stonewalling. He said defense officials didn't understand the importance of clearing up questions about the remains of victims of the September 11th attacks and of troops killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. They don't even seem to understand the gravity of the scandal, he said. They don't have the degree of chagrin or embarrassment they should have. Again, you see the changing morality in America as the Bible disappears. After the Bible reading in schools disappeared, everything changed. But the article goes on to say, family members of victims of the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center have previously alleged that some remains of their relatives were taken to a Staten Island landfill. Family members filed a lawsuit in 2005 to force New York to search for the remains, but a federal judge ruled that the plaintiffs could not successfully prove that they had a claim to any remains. Now, there is another atrocity. Jonathan Kahn remarked that there's a direct correlation between what he believes God's judgment coming on America shows with the images there a year ago of the towers lit up, the buildings, the high buildings lit up in celebration of Cuomo's abortion, alive abortion killing law passing. And here, you see, we have another thing. It's all linked there, right at New York. Some of these things that were atrocities, God cannot endure this. The families can't endure it. In Abiyazade's report, an appendix lists several previously undisclosed incidents of mismanagement, mishandled body parts, and other botched cases at the Dover mortuary. Separately, in July 2006, remains from four military personnel who died in an airplane crash were, quote, cremated and disposed of as medical waste rather than being interred in group burial, end of quote. Abiyazade's report blamed, quote, poor communication among branches of the military, but did not give details. In September 2005, an Air Force investigation found that, quote, human remains were routed, we'll say there, in a fashion constituting dereliction of duty, according to the report, which again did not give details. We can see that the goal of the Georgia Guidestones in Elberton, Georgia, which has the commandments of the New World Order, the new time under the New World Order, I think it's commandment number one, keep the population of the earth in balance at 500 million. The population culling is actively going on. Lou, I think you have some more about this. I want to say, though, that Eisenhower's words, they just keep reverberating during this program. But let's find out now about the bioweapon. It's not just as recent as we thought. It didn't just arrive yesterday on the banana boat, did it?
No, it didn't. So now we're going to move on to the civilian part of Ike's Back to the Future time capsule. One of the things we are all certainly presently fighting for our lives against is COVID-19. It's not gone or forgotten yet. We have more tonight. Your listeners have heard on our previous programs in 2020, and you can visit our archives at DividedKingdomRadio.com.
And we would urge you, the time might be growing short. Spiritually, we don't know what's going to happen. We really don't. And if God puts it on your conscience to tell others about our program, we're growing a little. And please tell them, pray, and tell them to visit our archives at DividedKingdomRadio.com, and they can go right to the archives and hear the important programs for August and September. Those were very key emergency broadcasts, weren't they, Lou?
That's exactly right.
And now let's move right on to what you have.
Yes, many of you listening may have heard what we had said about the COVID-19 is a lab-made bioweapon. You also heard about the Gates-affiliated pandemic drill, the Wuhan, October 2019, just about a year ago, World Military Games, and a mock-up world pandemic drill.
Strange coincidence, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. But nothing apparently is new under the sun. Elizabeth and I were stunned to discover two articles from late 2011, early 2012, one from the Washington Post, the other from USA Today.
And we were doing a little house cleaning in our records and our things here, and God always brings something to the fore when we need it.
That's so true. And apparently the global elite population reductionists had already started work on their killing fields. Here's how a precedent was starting to be set for where we are today. The first one for the Washington Post, and this it was dated Wednesday, December 21st, 2011, entitled Scientists Asked to Withhold Details of Lab-Created Flu. Scientists seeking to fight future pandemics have created a variety of bird flu, potentially so dangerous that a federal advisory panel has for the first time asked two science journals to hold back on publishing details of research. In the experiments, university-based scientists in the Netherlands and Wisconsin created a version of the H5N1 influenza virus that is highly lethal and easily transmissible between ferrets, the lab animals that are most closely associated with human beings in flu research. Members of the National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity, which was created after the anthrax bioterrorism attacks of 2001, worried that such a hazardous strain might be intentionally or accidentally released into the world if directions for making it were generally known. After weeks of reviewing papers describing the research, the NSABB said Tuesday it had recommended that the experiment's, quote, general conclusions, unquote, be published, but not, quote, details that could enable replication of the experiments by those who would seek to do harm. Censorship is considered the ultimate sin of original research. And these are the words of Michael T. Osterholm, a member of the board. Censorship is considered the ultimate sin of original research. However, we also have an imperative to keep certain research out of the hands of individuals who could use it for nefarious purposes. Again, that was by Michael T. Osterholm, a member of the board, who is also director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. And he said, quote, it is not unexpected that these two things would clash in this very special situation. The board cannot stop publication. Its advice went to the Department of Health and Human Services, whose leaders asked the authors of the papers and the journals reviewing them, Science, published in Washington, and Nature, published in London, to comply. The work was paid for by the National Institutes of Health as part of a large portfolio of research aimed at, quote, pandemic preparedness, unquote.
And where have we heard about the NIH with Dr. Fauci and the bird flu, not the bird flu, but the new COVID-19, the bat research going on in the North Carolina labs, and then it being in the Obama years sold over to Wuhan, the whole morass. is a big malignant spider web, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So here was the NIH. Go ahead.
The substance of the experiments has been known to some members of the influenza research community since early summer. There are strong and widely divergent views of what should be done with the results. A few scientists say the work should never have started. Because of its extreme virulence, H5N1 has been the flu strain most feared as a source of a possible influenza pandemic. What it lacked were the genetic changes permitting easy transmission by coughing, sneezing, and touch.
And you see, now it's been perfected. The evil is more perfected.
The new research has apparently produced these changes for the first time, at least in ferrets. Those are some excerpts from the Post article, and now from USA Today. This was dated, Thursday, January the 26th, 2012. The title of the article was Scientist Engineer Bioterror Fears. New man-made bird flu strains raise prospect of deadly pandemic.
And you see, this covered the end of 2011 and the beginning of 2012, these two separate articles.
Yes. It was a public health nightmare. A deadly flu bug spread like wildfire around the world, killing tens of millions of people. That was nearly a century ago. Fears that the nightmare could return today, perhaps with even more terrifying consequences, have set off a heated debate among scientists and for the first time delayed the publication of scientific flu research in two professional journals. The object of those fears? A threatening new version of the bird flu virus that didn't emerge in nature, but was born out of experiments in a lab. Researchers at the Netherlands and the University of Wisconsin-Madison who are trying to determine what genes might mutate and make bird flu attacks humans created a strain that can pass easily among ferrets. Why should we care that ferrets get the bird flu? Ferrets are the closest lab animal models to humans for flu vaccine studies.
I think that pretty well encapsulates the precedent that people have been tinkering with this evil for quite a while. And I think now we're going to move right on because we want to see what is going on with COVID itself and with COVID tyranny, because these are all parts of what Eisenhower warned us about. He didn't know that Big Pharma would become a part of the military-industrial complex because at that time he just didn't know that. But till America really repents and turns back to obeying God's word concerning killing the babies in the womb and celebrating all these gay marriage things in law, we will be, I think, continually devoured as we're being right now in this COVID-19, Antifa, BLM, Soros, Radical Islam. All of these people and factions are in this pit where we are pre-election. We are indeed fighting for our lives. And now we'll get to the case of some untypical people. We're told by those blockheaded patriot broadcasters who said it's just the flu, it's nothing, and don't wear masks. They might be held responsible sometime for a lot of deaths. Let's hear some things aren't typical. There are some cases that we said we would bring up. Lou, I believe you have the first.
I think you had the first. However, I do have the one about Sacramento County.
All right. I have number 14. What do you have?
Let me see now.
Don't you have, I think you have it. It tells about bottom line, and there tells a
couple of things. Oh, yes, I do have that one.
Yes, let's take yours first.
All right. Yeah, these are some, as Elizabeth says, some not quite so typical reports. These were from Bottom Line Health. First, we have...
And that's a respected newsletter. Actually, I'm probably going to discontinue it because it's too pro-vaccination. But it does have a lot of mainline doctors' opinions and advice, and as well as some of the more naturopathic doctors. So let's find out what went on.
Yes, this is written by Carrie Ali, the editor. When faced with the risk of everything from disasters to disease, some people can be overly optimistic. There are those who refuse to evacuate before a hurricane, and those who smoke, those who eschew vegetables, and those who don't wear a mask during a pandemic. When it comes to the sometimes heated debate on that last one, many skeptics insist that the risk of the novel coronavirus is overblown, and they point to the death rate as proof. But there is a wide expanse between health and death, and that's where Brian Kunz, 62, has found himself. Mr. Kunz, quote, was a pretty healthy guy, but he also thought COVID-19 was a hoax, according to his wife, Nancy. Little did he expect that what started as a headache and stomach pain in March would lead to 4 months away from his family and business, 100 days on life support, and in the end, a double lung transplant. The 10-hour lung surgery at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago, only the second double lung transplant ever done for someone with COVID-19, was a success. But while Mr. Kunz escaped death, his road back to health is long. He will need medications and care for the rest of his life. It's also expensive. His family reports that his bills have surpassed $2 million so far. At a press conference in July, Mr. Kunz quietly addressed the audience, the effort and fatigue apparent in his voice. Quote, COVID-19 isn't a joke. Please take this seriously. Unquote. Taking it seriously forces us to confront something we can't control. Miriam Z. Orman, Ph.D., an infectious disease specialist and member of our board of advisors, says that doesn't mean we're powerless. And it goes on to talk about some of the tips that they give.
And also, I believe down at the corner there, there was a finding about a neurological problem that could occur. Could you give us that?
Yes. Data analysis of 125 people hospitalized for COVID-19 found that brain effects include both cerebrovascular incidents, that's stroke and hemorrhage, and altered mental states such as new-onset psychosis, dementia, catatonia, and mania. More than one quarter of studied patients were in their 20s to 40s. It is not known if these conditions will persist over time.
So that's pretty shocking. And then I have an article from Time magazine, When COVID Doesn't Go, and I'll just give you a little of this portrait. This was the story of Kayla Brim. Kayla Brim laughed when she learned it could take 10 days to get her COVID-19 test results back. I thought, okay, well, within 10 days, I should be fine, she remembers. That was on July 2nd. More than a month later, Brim is still far from fine. Before the pandemic, the 28-year-old, did you hear that, listeners? I didn't say 72. I didn't say 65. I said the 28-year-old from Caldwell, Idaho, juggled homeschooling her two kids with her work as a makeup artist. She was supposed to open her own salon in July. Now she suffers daily from shortness of breath, exhaustion, excruciating headaches, brain fog, neuropathy, high blood pressure, and loss of taste and smell. She feels like, quote, a little old lady, completely knocked out by simple tasks like making lunch for her children. She's working just enough to help pay the bills and the lease on her empty salon, but she has no idea when she'll be able to work full-time again, and no idea how she and her husband will manage financially if she can't. Half of my day is spent trying to sleep, and the other half of it is trying to pretend like I'm okay, and I don't know when I'll be okay, Brim says. This is long-haul COVID-19. Even young, healthy people can become long haulers, as many call themselves, left unable to work, lead a normal life, or some days get out of bed. The consequences for each individual can be devastating. When most people think of COVID-19, they imagine two possibilities: a flu-like illness that clears on its own, or a life-threatening condition that requires ventilation and a hospital stay. It's not hard to see how the latter scenario leads to long-term damage. Mechanical ventilation is incredibly hard on the lungs, and days or weeks spent sedated in a hospital bed can sap physical and mental strength. In a small study published in 2011, nearly all the participants who needed intensive treatment for a severe lung injury reported decreased physical ability and quality of life 5 years after leaving the hospital. Some took years to return to work. Hospitalized coronavirus patients may face a similar fate. But with COVID-19, it's not just the sickest who face a long road back. A July 24th report from the U.S. CDC found that out of about 300 non-hospitalized but symptomatic COVID-19 patients, 35% were still experiencing symptoms like coughing, shortness of breath, and fatigue up to 3 weeks after diagnosis. By contrast, more than 90% of non-hospitalized influenza patients fully recover within 2 weeks. Recovery from COVID-19 can be a drawn-out process for patients of all ages, genders, and prior levels of health. Now, we would just say here, if it's a bioweapon, that makes sense that it's harder. The body isn't equipped to fight this. And nobody knows why this long-haul problem with COVID-19 happens. And we could go on in this farther, but we know that here's this woman that she is having all this trouble, 28. And here's another case, 46-year-old Andrea Cerisa, getting better as a full-time job minus the paycheck. Cerisa had to leave her job managing a New Jersey dental office after she got sick in mid-April with what she and her doctors believe was COVID-19. She tested negative for the virus and its antibodies, but her doctors think they were false negatives. More than 100 days later, she's in regular contact with her primary care physician, an integrative care doctor, and a rotating cast of specialists who she hopes can treat her lingering gastrointestinal problems, hearing and vision issues, weight and hair loss, heart palpitations, migraines, brain fog, neuropathy, fatigue, nausea, and anxiety. And that first person we talked about was only 28, and this 46-year-old doesn't know whether she will ever get better. She says, I can't imagine living like this for another day, let alone the rest of my life. At this point, no one knows if she'll have to. And, Lou, I think we're going to move right now in the time we have, because we're talking about the New World Order ganging up on us. And we have to look at this article. Now, there's a lot of disinfo, we think, going on. And first of all, we have this. CDC admits there is no proof COVID-19 is airborne virus, and they have been misleading the public all along. Yes, we remember those two college girls. It was reported on Fox News early on that these girls came from Italy, I believe. They were studying overseas, and they stopped in New York to do the right thing. They called the CDC, should we be quarantined? No, you girls just run along home. Remember also how the CDC discouraged states from COVID testing? You see, was this a pandemic that was planned, allowed to happen, allowed to get worse, so that our economy could be taken down, maybe lead to a worldwide economic collapse? So here we have September 25th, Shane Trejo in Big League Politics writing this. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has admitted that the organization has deceived the public throughout the entire coronavirus pandemic, backtracking on their claim that COVID-19 is an airborne virus. Now, we could go on and on and on about this updated thing, that the virus is thought to spread mainly from person to person. This is updated. It may be possible that a person can get COVID-19 by touching a surface or object that has the virus on it and then touching their own mouth, nose, or possibly their eyes. This is not thought to be the main way the virus spreads, but we are still learning more about how this virus spreads, the new guidelines state, with the CDC parsing their words carefully to note there is no concrete evidence behind their assertion. So you see now, we're having them go the other way. All this way, and we bring up Dr. Aaron Bromage, an article in which Dr. Aaron Bromage, who I believe was a biology professor, recounted the story of a man in a restaurant, and there was air conditioning going, and he sat and he ate, and then someone at the next table near him got it, and it went through the air conditioning. And then a couple more people who were there, they went to a church, they sang, and a lot of church members got it, and someone died. So we think this is highly suspect. Now, after all the advice we were given to say from the CDC, there's no proof that COVID-19 is an airborne virus. No, we heard Dr. Francis Boyle, the gain of function, he said, made it that it could leap maybe 13 feet. Someone on a bus got COVID, and they thought that's what had happened. Now, here's another weird one. We think this disinfo is for you to let down your guard. There, we have it. It's for you to be an unsuspecting person who's being led to the guillotine. You're a lemming, and they're pushing you closer to the cliff you're to fall off. So here we have from the Western Journal. And this is September 25th. By the way, we probably aren't going to finish all this tonight. We're going to have a part two, and we'll have to be getting in to some of the other things that involve us fighting for our lives, and that's the BLM, that's the Antifa, that's the Blue Cities, the Marxism. All of that is part of what Ike was prescient about. Now, here we are. Study finds dominant strain of COVID may have mutated for, quote, getting around masks. A new study released Wednesday found that the novel coronavirus may have mutated to get around interventions such as mask wearing. Scientists in Houston studied over 5,000 genetic sequences of SARS-CoV-2, but did not find that the mutations have made the virus deadlier or changed clinical outcomes, the Washington Post reported. David Morins, a virologist at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, reviewed the study and said it suggests the virus has become more transmissible and could, quote, have implications for our ability to control it. Wearing masks, washing our hands, all those things are barriers to transmissibility or contagion, Morin said. But as the virus becomes more contagious, it statistically is better at getting around those barriers. He added that, quote, you don't want to overinterpret the study's implications. Well, I should say so. This ridiculous theory about the virus getting around masks would need a lot more proof, I would think, before I would buy it. Is this still one more clever way to make people think masks are useless and thereby let more quit wearing them and more get infected? Now, there may be some truth that the virus is mutating. Study author, I'm back to the article now, James Musser of Houston Methodist Hospital said that due to the widespread transmission of the virus across the country, it has had many opportunities to change as it replicates. We've given this virus a lot of chances, he told the Post. There is a huge population size out there right now. And compared to other viruses such as HIV, SARS, COVID-2 has mutated more slowly as it spreads, Nature reported. However, researchers have cataloged over 12,000 mutations of the virus's genomes. The mutation tracked in the new study, which has not yet been peer-reviewed, could have implications on any vaccine formulated to fight COVID-19. Although we don't know yet, it is well within the realm of possibility that this coronavirus, when our population level immunity gets high enough, this coronavirus will find a way to get around our immunity, Morin said. If that happened, we'd be in the same situation as with the flu. We'll have to chase the virus, and as it mutates, we'll have to tinker with our vaccine. And we have all heard how low the correlation is. When you get the flu shot, it doesn't work for the new flu of this year. So you're just taking all that into your body, all of the aborted fetal cells, all of the adjuvants. And you recall that we talked on the last program or two. We had information that seems to suggest that these vaccinations let the viruses shed, and so that people who get vaccinated may be contagious. They might not get it, but you might if you're around them. So these researchers found that during Houston's second wave of coronavirus, over 99% of samples contained the D614G mutation, which refers to the substitution of an amino acid called aspartic acid for one called glycine, possibly giving the virus a biological advantage as it spreads. We have so much more, but we know that there are some surges going on. Quickly, Lou, I'm going to tell you here, there's an article, Gospel Choir Practice Infects 30 of 41 Members with Virus. This was in Spain, northeastern Spain. They were inside. There wasn't a lot of air circulation. The River Troop Gospel, pardon me, rehearsed on September 11th, and after one member of the chorus got COVID, Then more than 40 others and their close contacts went into isolation. Since then, at least 30 singers have tested positive. What do you have about the world stats, Lou? And next week, you'll get a lot more, so you want to tell people to go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com.
That's right. Here are some headlines from Zero Hedge, and this is within the last week. Germany adds 11 regions to travel warning list. France orders bars and restaurants shut in Marseille. And Paris on, quote, high alert, unquote. The head of the FDA Advisory Committee recuses herself from COVID vaccine review. Irish outbreak worsens. Eiffel Tower reopens. But the Met Opera in New York scraps the whole season. CDC director hints at new guidance on aerosols. The U.S. nears 7 million cases. Trump moves more money to Operation Warp Speed. New York City warns of new
hotspots. How many million cases did we near?
7 million.
Oh, really? In the cases?
Yeah.
And it's near 200,000 deaths, isn't it?
Yes, I may have passed that as we speak. Yes.
Go ahead.
New York City warns of new hotspots that require, quote, urgent action, unquote. Mayor de Blasio furloughs 9,000 workers. France to announce new COVID restrictions. Japan on track to approve new COVID drug. Indonesia reports another daily record. China, Japan to ease travel restrictions on foreigners. Those are just some of the world headlines. And let's see now.
And it's very important that we next week get to the questions about will this be a time bomb if Trump brings this vaccine out before the necessary safety trials have been done. Don't you have that headline? Why don't you just read that headline to us?
Yes, that headline says, both the president and investors are betting everything on a fast-tracked coronavirus vaccine. But what if they're accidentally unleashing a medical time bomb on America?
Yes, and the other headline here was September 11th, twisted. Trump goes full pro-vaccine as Biden and Kamala say they won't trust any vaccine promoted by Trump. Well, we count on Jesus Christ as our guide, and the Bible gives us wisdom. The prudent man prepares. And you know out there, you listeners, think for yourselves. That's why you tune into our program, because we aren't financed by George Soros. We aren't financed by the big pharma, the vaccine makers. But no, we're financed by God, just us and those of you who are able to help us. And we do really thank those of you who have helped to keep us on the air miraculously this long. And we hope we'll be here a lot longer. And you can say happy birthday to Lou. Even though he's 39, are you going to play the violin?
I never learned how to play that. I should have. Yep.
That's how you would sound, I think. Yes, but we are very thankful that the Lord has given us this work as watchmen, and we pray that we will be a blessing in the way that God wills. Good night.